Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Chris and Amy Show.
Check it out.
St. Louis, Mound City, we are going to have a great day today.
Now, Amy Marks Corps, Chris Ronji on KMOX.
Let's take it from the top.
Good morning, friends. Happy Boxing Day. Let's do it. What do you say? That didn't mean to rhyme. Sorry. Nate Gatter, Chris Ronji today. Nate is in for Amy Marks Corps. We're going to have a good time regardless. Not that Nate's not a good time. I'm just saying that Amy won't be here. 314-436-7900. That's how you reach the show. That's a text number, a call number. I know some people don't like using the phone these days, but you can do it today if you want. Also, that Odyssey app, we have told you about it a million times. It's a great app. It is free. You can listen to this show. You can listen to the entire station. You can listen to Cardinals baseball during the season. It is free. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it. And also, you can leave us a voice message directly from the app.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Yep, Christmas is over. Now we are heading straight to the new year. 2025 is coming up. Also today, one of the suspects in the Colin Brown killing will appear in court, and the Blues are getting ready for their game, which will happen tomorrow against the Predators. Those are some of the things that are happening here in St. Louis. And, of course, we have heard from President-elect Trump and his desire to retake the Panama Canal. We're going to talk to Scott McFarland about that and the transition as it is ongoing. We are rapidly approaching January 20th, which is when Donald Trump will reassume office. Also, Bernie Miklas is on the show today as well. So you've got the phone number, the ways to reach us, and we also have a streaming thing. That means you can watch us, like, on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter, at Chris Amy KMOX, and you can see our faces. You can see Nate. You can see me. You can see James, too. You can't see James. He's not on the screen. I don't know why. James, why aren't you on the screen? James isn't on the screen. James O'Sullivan producing the show today. But we're here for you for what is now post-Christmas. And Nate, I have to tell you, this is one of my least favorite days of the entire year, just because I love Christmas so much. I enjoy the anticipation of it, probably more than the day itself. It's just it's the whole buildup, and I've been that way since I was a kid. You know, there's a lot of mystery and good times that happen with Christmas.
Before we get too deep into like the time of year then between Christmas and New Year's, which I think is where you're going. I do want to just touch on that fact that you're a big Christmas guy,
love
especially
it.
The build up to Christmas and all the things you were just saying, because, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I think of you as a generally somewhat cynical guy, right?
What?
Like you're like the witty one liner guy. I don't think of you as waxing poetic about the magic of Christmas guy, and yet you do. And I think that's great. It's a fun other side of you that we don't always see.
I love Christmas so much.
I never felt so much like Christmas in all my life. Don't you, Sherry dear?
Shut your nasty little face.
I love Christmas. And I feel like, all right, I love St. Patrick's Day. I love that time of year, March. Probably part of it is because it's my birthday in the middle of March. So I like St. Patrick's Day. I like Halloween. 4th of July is fun, too. It's just that time of year where it's hot, and I don't like hot weather that much. But there's something about Christmas, because it's the only holiday where there's a real buildup toward it. And the buildup lasts for several weeks. And I love that. To me, the anticipation is better than the day itself. And Amy and I talk about this all the time, and she's in agreement. That's one of the things we agree on. I love it. And when it's over, it's almost like, we got to do this now? We got to do just regular gloomy days with no anything to look forward to except for the new year, which whatever, who cares?
The only thing that I agree with you. The only thing I don't like about the anticipation of Christmas is I think we like it so much that it keeps stretching earlier and earlier that we start doing Christmas season. And I feel like, especially this year, I felt like Thanksgiving really got trampled.
I don't appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't appreciate that. I am a Thanksgiving guy, and I think Thanksgiving needs to be respected.
Thanksgiving, to me, should just be annexed by Christmas.
Oh, my God.
It should just be like a... It's like...
Thanksgiving is your Panama Canal, is what you're saying. And you're ready to take it back.
Well, no. No, what I'm saying, yes, actually, yes, I am saying that it's my Panama Canal. It to me is like a Christmas appetizer.
Oh, I hate to hear you say that, but I understand.
With worse colors,
I think many people felt that way. I just don't think it's right that on Thanksgiving people already have. I mean, I was in places. I saw people in some neighborhoods who would have their houses, you know, their lights all up for Christmas and all their decorations, or at least their outdoor decorations up on November 5th, something like that. That's a little too much for me.
It's perfect.
Okay.
I think that we can. It's such a good holiday. If you celebrate it, it is such a great holiday that we should extend it as much as possible. It's the only holiday we have where there's a whole playlist. You know, there are 4th of July America songs. There are St. Patrick songs that are kind of St. Patrick's Day centric. There are some Halloween songs, but it is the only one with a real true playlist. I mean, I guess Halloween has a few, but Christmas has just an entire catalog.
You're not a dreidel, dreidel, dreidel guy?
I mean, I don't think it's a particularly good song. And here's what I know. I know a lot of Jewish people who actually, well, not they don't celebrate Christmas, but they have Christmas in their homes. Maybe it's a mixed religion family where she's Catholic, he's Jewish, and so they do Christmas. Like they go all out for Christmas. I've had multiple Jewish people say your holiday is awesome.
Yeah,
it is. It's just it's an objectively fun holiday. They're very different. They just happen to coincide. It's day two, by the way, of Hanukkah.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, you know, neither of us are Jewish, so this would be wild speculation, and maybe we should solicit.
I am 6% European Jewish.
There you go.
Yeah.
If you are
according to Ancestry.com,
if you are Jewish or a celebrator of Hanukkah, maybe you could, text or call or tweet us or whatever your thoughts. I would like to know if they like the years that Hanukkah begins on Christmas or Christmas Eve, or if they just, because, you know, some years Hanukkah and
usually
and Christmas don't even overlap
at all. A lot of times it's over before Christmas.
And then other times, you know, I'm wondering if for logistical purposes, it's probably a little bit easier when the first day of Hanukkah is Christmas or Christmas Eve, just because the whole world kind of stops a little bit. And so it's easier rather than if the first day of Hanukkah is like December 16th or something. But on the other hand, the first day of Hanukkah really gets lost when it's on Christmas. I don't think a lot of people, you know, to the extent that you care about corporations also acknowledging your holiday, I think the happy Hanukkah tweets probably get buried a little bit.
Yeah, they do. And it's not fair. It's not fair. What in the world was that? It's not fair to them. But I do know that we can all celebrate together, can't we? We can all just acknowledge one another and be happy. I think we should. Because
it seemed like a happy day yesterday.
Yesterday is great, was great. For most people, it is. We asked the question on Christmas Eve when Brad Young and I were hosting about any holiday arguments or holiday blowups that you may have experienced in the past. If you had a good one yesterday, we'd love to hear about it. You don't have to name names. You don't have to give us your name.
Especially if it's something totally random, like if it's a Seinfeld type thing where your family became obsessed with arguing about something that didn't matter at all, I would love to hear the details.
We had somebody on Christmas Eve tell us about a time, and they sent in a voice message, and you can do that too on the Odyssey app. You record a message. There's a little icon that says, I think it says leave a message. There's a microphone on it. Tap it and record and send it to us. And this person said that he and his wife drove from St. Louis to Raleigh, North Carolina for Christmas. So it's what, 12, 15 hours, something like that? They get there. They're there about an hour, and she gets in an argument with her twin sister, and they leave and come right back to St. Louis.
Wow.
They drove over a dozen hours to get to North Carolina for Christmas and said nope, and they came right back. I mean, how bad of a blow up do you have to have?
what I would like to know also is how predictable this was. Like, is this like she and her twin sister are always teetering on the edge and everyone in the family knows?
Had to have been.
It must be, especially if they thought that after an hour it was broken beyond repair and the only choice was to drive all the way back to St. Louis. I think I would have, you know, let's get a hotel for the night. Let's go have dinner somewhere. Let's cool off and let's see how we feel in the morning. Maybe we can still get something out of this.
Maybe we can do something tomorrow.
I mean, it must have been bad to give up completely and do 24 plus hours of driving for 1 hour there and just call it like that. It must have been bad.
Pretty awesome, though. Oh. It's awesome when it's not you.
It's a story.
If you had something like that happen and you want to vent about it, this is your place to do it. If it's a good story, 314-436-7900, or just drop us a voice message in the Odyssey app. Well, we're also going to preview a little bit the bowl games. The Missouri Tigers are playing in the Music City Bowl. That's coming up. The Fighting Illini will be playing in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. That is also coming up. That's
doesn't
on New
line
Year's
up.
Eve.
Like the sponsor.
It doesn't.
I mean, did we talk about this before? Like, imagine a citrus Cheez-It. I'm not saying I dislike citrus or dislike Cheez-Its, but I don't know that I would be first in line for a citrus Cheez-It.
It's really weird.
Although now, I mean, I guess I'm intrigued. They did put one out for the bowl game, like, I would try it.
I'd try it.
Yeah, just to see.
I'd be like I don't know if you follow this guy, the Chef Reactions guy on Instagram.
No.
Where he reacts to people recording themselves preparing these dishes, you know, that they think are great. And sometimes I feel like they're trolling, but they are just, it's always really bad, and it's always somebody who's got just one of the big aluminum tins that they put in the oven, and they just dump a bunch of crap in it. It's always really gross. And this guy critiques their recipes as they're making the food, and he's pretty funny about it. And in the end, he always gives it a rating, and he says, I would try it. So I would try a citrus Cheez-It, I think.
But I suspect it would not be very good.
No, it's going to be terrible. Cheese and oranges and lemons, those don't go together.
No.
Nate Gatter, Chris Ranji, Scott McFarland will join us at 10:30. We will talk about the incoming president and the transition, what's happening, what's going to happen. Bernie Miklas, as I mentioned, will join us at 11:30. And of course, let's hear from you, 314-436-7900. It's return day. You're out and about returning the gifts you don't like. It's the Chris and Amy show on KMOX. This is what I'm talking about. I love David Bowie. Awesome, historic, one of the great artists ever in music history. And I don't want to be listening to it today. I don't want to listen to regular music. I want us to still be rejoining with Christmas tunes, which we have done for weeks now. And now it's back to normal. KEZK is back to normal. It's just December 26th is a real kick in the groin, you know?
Do you think, with that in mind, that it would be in KZK's best interest to maybe do a wind down period where, like, there's still some Christmas music until New Year's Day, maybe?
What a great idea that would be.
Quitting cold turkey seems like it's giving you a little bit of angst.
And they flip it, like, right in the middle of the night. They go straight from, you know, Sinatra, White Christmas to that.
Do you have it on at like 11:58, 11:59, or December 25th? Like, they're going to take it away from me.
I have done that before, and it really bums me out.
Oh, man. I mean, that's just a
gut
punch.
That's like
self-flagellation at that point, though. You are doing it
to yourself.
I'm doing
it on purpose.
Yeah.
When they make the flip, and they did it right after Thanksgiving, I want to say, or maybe right before, I can't remember, but I think they did it a little earlier than normal this year. They made the flip to Christmas music. When that happens, that's like, wow. It's like turning the lights on. It is like turning on the Christmas tree.
And you've listened to at that moment before as well?
I have not. I've always missed
it. Maybe
that
you should
one.
Do that, because that might help counteract, you know, that would really uplift you.
So today is the day that historically people return their Christmas gifts that they do not like, that don't fit, that aren't appropriate for them, or were very clearly re-gifted from somebody else, and they don't want them. The estimation is, well, in 2023, the number was about 15.4% of people return, on average, their gifts or had gifts to return.
That's lower than I would have thought. Is it just that that's the percentage who returned at least one gift they received at Christmas?
I don't have the answer for that. But 60% of consumers who were younger, so over the age of 18, but younger consumers, said that they planned to return gifts at a rate of about 10%. The older you get, the more likely you are to return a gift. I know people who absolutely refuse to ever return anything. They don't like the process. They don't like going in. Even if they bought something on Amazon, they won't package it up and just put it back in the mail. They just won't do it.
Amazon returns are very easy. I'm not a big return person, but Amazon returns are quite easy.
Super easy, and you could take it to, like, a Whole Foods, for example.
You don't even have to box it up. You can just take the thing to Whole Foods, and they scan the QR code, you hand it to them, you're done.
And there are drop boxes that you could do it yourself. So you just take the item out, put it in a bag, scan the code, they give you a label, you put the label on the bag, you drop it in the box. It's super, super easy. And I have done that a number of times. Amazon probably hates me for the amount of things that I return.
Economy does. We talked to a guy last December, I think, on this topic, who basically said that people like you are the problem, that when you buy and return a bunch of stuff, it basically increases prices everywhere, because that's just coming out of the bottom line for merchants.
You know what, though? I'm on the plus side, though, because I still keep more than I send back. I don't send that much back relative to what I buy.
Got it. So you're really just a prolific consumer.
Yeah, I'm contributing to the economy in a positive way.
Oh, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt.
Yeah. So I just want to be acknowledged for that.
You are a contributor.
Holiday shopping, and you heard it probably during the newscast at the top of the hour, but holiday spending this year increased 3.8%. I've seen also an estimation that it was up 4.8%, but that was going into the final week of shopping. So let's just call it even and say about 4%. It's up about 4% from last season. So the economy is doing well. At least people feel like it's doing well enough that they can spend during the holiday season. So that means more gifts to return. Have you ever returned anything, first of all? Have you ever done that?
Yes.
Okay. Are you more inclined to return something that doesn't work for you? Or would you just keep it and say, I don't want to go with the hassle and deal with being at the stores and or even boxing it up? I don't feel like it.
I think it depends on how difficult it's going to be to return. I also think, especially historically, I am less likely to return something that was a gift, even if it's not great, just because I don't feel like I'm losing anything if I don't, right? Like, I didn't actually spend money on it, so it's not like it's costing me. Whereas if I spent $50 on something and I realize I don't want it and I can return it without too much difficulty, I'm definitely going to.
Have you ever given something that you have been given? Have you ever given that to somebody?
Like,
have you
re-gifted?
Ever gifted? Yeah.
I don't think so. I was actually just thinking that when you said if they receive something that's obviously re-gifted, I was like, I don't think I've ever re-gifted anything. And I don't think I've ever received something that I felt was obviously, that I would have been able to detect was re-gifted in any way, let alone obviously.
I love the stories of people who have re-gifted something to somebody that gave it to them. Like, they will receive a gift and it just sits in the box for a couple of years and they forget who gave it to them, and they will wrap it back up and give it to that person. It's very rare, but it does happen. I love it. I love the idea of disliking a gift so much and not even caring, not even thinking about, I wonder who gave this to me. Maybe I should be conscious of that. Nah, you know, screw it. I hate this. I want it out of my house. I'm going to give it to this guy. And then you give it back to them. They go, dude, I gave this to you.
Yeah, it's a little unlucky.
I gave this to you 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's a little unlucky. If you imagine
awesome.
That there are at least, I mean, what? The typical adult probably has at least 5, if not 10 or more people in there with whom they exchange gifts typically or to whom they give gifts at a typical Christmas, right? There are a decent number of people. It's a little bit, you know, just kind of bad luck on the roulette wheel that you end up giving it to the guy who gave it to you.
I mentioned this last week, and we did a poll on our Twitter account, at Chris Amy KMOX, if you're a gift wrap person or a gift bag person. Of course, most people would prefer gift wrapping, but it seems like most people use gift bags because it is totally easy. I love getting gifts that are wrapped. And I have evidence that at least a couple of my family members listen to this show because all my gifts were wrapped this year.
100%.
So those just think this, I'm, look, we have those listeners at least, and they listen to me.
Did you see the video?
I'm very happy.
I saw a video on social media of a guy who, I guess, a young man, probably in his 20s, who had forgotten to wrap gifts or had just neglected to wrap gifts for his family members as of Christmas morning. And so he was handing out the gifts. He found a gift bag. He put the gift in it for the first family member, gave it to him. They open the gift. They say, thank you so much. I love it. He takes the gift bag. He runs back up the stairs, puts the next gift for the next family member in the same gift bag, and proceeds to do that like four or five times.
Look, I love the bit. I like the act of ripping paper and there being a gift inside of it. I love that. But that bit, that's worth it.
Pretty funny.
Oh, that's what a great bit. I wish I would have thought of that. I mean, I've reused a ton of gift bags, but I've never thought to do it in the moment. Like, hey, give me that bag back. I'll be right back.
Just real sneaky. I'll take that.
That's so great. I love it so much. That's Nate Gatter. I'm Chris Ranji. Feel free to drop us a voice message on the Audacy app, AUDACY. When we come back, we will get an update how things are progressing in President-elect Trump's transition as he gets ready to become the president again on January 20th. We will talk to Scott McFarlane with CBS News when we come back on KMOX. It's the Chris and Amy show on KMOX. No Amy today. She is out. She'll be back on Monday, or she better. I swear she better be. That's Nate Gatter sitting in with me, Chris Ranji. Glad you're with us today. And we go to the Quiver River Electric guest line, and we visit with Scott McFarlane, CBS News congressional correspondent, who is with us this morning. How's it going, Scott?
Hey, Merry Christmas. Good to be with you both.
Hey, first of all, let me just tell you, no, eggnog is not overrated. It's fantastic. I saw your tweet, it is occurring to me now. I've had none of it all season. So that's not good.
Does that maybe fly in the face of what you're saying? Maybe you subconsciously do think it's overrated?
No, I think it's wonderful.
There it is.
Okay, I love it so much.
I don't know.
Also, Scott, I saw that you received, I just watched the Muppets Christmas Carol a couple of nights ago, and you received animal socks.
Nice choice by the kids who ordered them for me far enough in advance. Because, you know, at the Muppet clothes-making specialist, it's a bit of a backlog at the holiday season. So I'm glad they went in early, got those animal socks, and the Statler and Waldorf sweater. And got those done ahead of time.
Oh, I didn't know you got that, too. That's unbelievable. Well, Merry Christmas to you, Scott. And there's nothing like being back at work the day after Christmas, and as we're covering the president-elect Trump transition, he's going to become president in January. This Panama Canal thing, which over the last week or so is new, it really feels to have come out of nowhere. Do we know what the origin of his recent interest in that is?
I say this only somewhat cynically, and somewhat as a wise guy, but perhaps there was a Fox News or talk radio segment that reintroduced the concept of the controversy that was there in the late 70s that our parents, some of us remember, when it was given back to Panama. I mean, that was a controversial move 2 to 3 generations ago that may have just spurred the interest in Donald Trump. I mean, there are fees America pays to use the Panama Canal. There are costs to using the canal. It certainly is the economic driver of Panama itself, but Panama is under the unequivocal notion that that is theirs, and there's no, I guess, pressure or momentum in Congress or at the state level for the U.S. to interfere with that.
Do you think there will build momentum for that? Because sometimes it seems like ideas, when they come from him, have no... It's like they're coming from nowhere. And then suddenly they do have momentum because there are a lot of people who want to carry out his agenda. So do you think momentum does build in that direction from Congress?
I think everything he said runs counter to there being momentum on this. I mean, he has campaigned successfully on decreasing foreign entanglements and going, you know, into other nations and interfering with their business or putting U.S. forces elsewhere in the world. So it's contradictory to other things he says. It's also such a far-fetched notion. I don't see a wall of support building behind this. Perhaps best he's doing this over the holidays.
Scott, for those of us who don't recall the controversies of yesteryear, can you explain maybe some of the levers at play here and kind of who would stand to really benefit such that they might be part of why President-elect Trump all of a sudden is showing interest in this kind of out of nowhere?
Yeah, the history of this, which, you know, of course, begins with the development of the Panama Canal and the loss of lives by the thousands doing that remarkably Herculean task, peaked in controversy in the late 70s when President Carter decided to return the Panama Canal to the people of Panama and to, I guess, divest the U.S. government of its equity and interests in the Panama Canal. I think what Donald Trump is picking up on there was the frustration that surrounded that decision when he was younger, a few generations ago, when it seemed like the U.S. was losing its might, its force across the globe, and it was surrendering something. That's symmetrical to Donald Trump's promises that the U.S. needs to show its might, to show its toughness, to increase its equity in other parts of the world. But again, it runs counter to him saying we shouldn't get entangled with other potential unrest in other parts of the world. So I don't know where that heads next, but it does hit a sweet spot with a certain part of his constituency, which remembers the frustration and the anger of the late 70s when that decision was made.
CBS News congressional correspondent Scott McFarlane is with us here on KMOX. And as we are preparing for another Trump presidency here, just generally speaking, what has this transition been like compared to what it was the first time he assumed office?
Couple differences. I mean, first of all, the efficiency with which these nominations have been made is noteworthy and certainly different. I mean, with such rapid pacing, he has named all these would-be contenders for his cabinet. It's almost been fluid, which is different than 2016 when there was more herky-jerky and things happened a little more in the 11th hour. But he's certainly gone further down some very dark passages for some of these nominees. I mean, there are going to be controversial hearings for at least a good chunk of these nominees. He has put some polarizing, provocative figures forward, more so than he did 8 years ago when there were some more mainstream government experienced candidates. I mean, just think about Pete Hegseth's going to have a bumpy confirmation hearing. The Democrats have kept their powder dry, but there are all number of it. There's a whole number of allegations they can pick up on. RFK Jr., so far, the Democrats have kept their powder dry. Any number of vaccine stances he's taken that will cause noise in the confirmation hearings. Tulsi Gabbard has been accused of being a Putin puppet, somebody who echoes Russian talking points. And oh, by the way, there's still Kash Patel, who to call polarizing is an understatement. Democrats have not targeted these nominees yet with what they're going to bring at confirmation hearings. And there's already been bumps on the road. That's different than 8 years ago.
Scott, bearing in mind the polarization of some of those, the polarity of some of those nominees that he has put forward already, and that there are remain significant fights for confirmation, even with Matt Gaetz having withdrawn his name, do you think that President Trump and his transition team maybe regret the Gaetz nomination and the attention that that drew as just sort of further underscoring that maybe he had gone a little extreme on these nominees relative to what he was doing 8 years ago?
It certainly caused a bump or two they didn't need to have in the initial days of this transition. I don't know if they will say they regret it, but it certainly didn't win them anything. But there is the argument, a pretty compelling argument, that by putting forward a number of controversial picks at the same time necessarily dilutes the attention and scrutiny each one gets. There's safety in numbers for the Trump transition team by putting so many different targets up at the same time. There are only so many times people can open political fire at any one of them, and that may work to their benefit. And Matt Gaetz further diluted the attention that would otherwise have been given to Tulsi Gabbard and to Pete Hegseth and to RFK Jr.
I imagine that the support for Matt Gaetz on the Hill is not as great as and I'm speaking from the perspective of Republicans even. That's just my guess. Observing from the outside, I would think there probably aren't a whole lot of Republicans who actually like him very much. Is that the case, or does he have more support than we think?
I think that's Matt Gaetz's biggest problem, is that he has any number of acrimonious relationships with fellow Republicans. I mean, at least two Republicans on the House Ethics Committee voted to release that damning Ethics Committee investigation of Gates on Monday. And that tells you about the fractured relationships that are there, because that was a bold step. The House Ethics Committee tends not to release reports of members who are no longer in their jurisdiction or in the U.S. Congress. Matt Gaetz ousted a House Speaker for the first time in American history in late 2023 by leading the charge to get rid of Kevin McCarthy. That fractured relationships. He is, to put it mildly, a high-profile figure and kind of devoured the attention that would otherwise go to some of his colleagues with so many high-profile moves and so many high-drama moments. I'm not sure he has a stable foundation of Republican support in this Congress, and that may be another reason why he decided to exit.
Scott McFarland, CBS News, with us on KMOX, and you have been covering for, you know, several years now, all of the January 6th, the various trials that have taken place, and we are 10 days away from, you know, the next January 6th. So with a new administration coming in, and one that has a pretty vested interest in what happens with a lot of these defendants, how do you assume, or how do you think a lot of these, you know, these outcomes will go? Will they be overturned? Will he end up trying to, you know, pardon all or many of them? What do you think happens next there?
Well, he has unambiguously pledged pardons for at least some of the January 6th defendants, but you've really hit on a point of frustration for me, because he's never been pressed to clarify what that means. Is it going to be everybody? Is it going to be all 1,600 riot defendants? Or is it going to be just some, a subgroup, those who were not violent, those who were not convicted of felonies? He's never clarified. Will he allow the Department of Justice to continue with new January 6 cases? There are still hundreds of people being sought, including the alleged pipe bomber. Would he allow the Department of Justice to continue investigating, or is he going to shut that down? Will he commute or pardon? Big difference in changing somebody's sentence versus wiping this slate clean. He's never clarified. When people have tried to prod him and poke him on that, he's been unclear with his responses. We don't know where this is going. But I know what our Department of Justice sources tell us is that they're concerned with the message this sends. A broad set of pardons or commutations sends a message that political violence is acceptable if your guy eventually takes power. That is third world stuff, and that is a message that will be communicated through pardons, no matter your political persuasion.
The Department of Justice and anybody who works in it will vehemently deny that the department has been weaponized in any way, that they operate independently. The current president has said that he doesn't interfere with what they do, what decisions it is that they make. Is there, how much fear is there that that could change? First of all, if it's even true, because a lot of people believe that that department has been weaponized. I personally do not believe that to be the case. But this incoming administration has been pushing that idea that it has. So what is that community saying about what is to come next?
What a Rorschach test that question is. Is the Department of Justice weaponized? The Trump team and Trump supporters would argue not only has it been weaponized because he was charged with novel criminal cases, but that because he campaigned on it being weaponized and a majority of Americans backed him, that there's almost a mandate to consider the Department of Justice weaponized. The Trump opponents would argue, what type of weaponized Department of Justice under Democratic rule would indict the president's son, the Democratic senator from New Jersey, and the Democratic congressman from Southern Texas? So you can make it an ink blot test and read it how you want to. But there's certainly concern that the Trump team feels they're emboldened to do a tit for tat here and to respond in kind to what they view to be the weaponization of the Department of Justice. They may feel inclined to go ahead and do something similar.
You know, speaking of the current administration, I know we talked about this last week on the show, the pardons that President Biden had issued, and the one of his son in particular, which is a very big deal after saying he would not do it. It seems like, Scott, that did not go over well in Congress, and that includes members of the Democratic Party. Is that true?
Yep. I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. Partly because he said so unequivocally that he wouldn't do it. So there's at least a concern of hypocrisy marring his legacy. But also, it didn't go through the traditional processes. It didn't go through the very elaborate process that pardon requests must go through or typically go through. It was unilateral, and it was a process cut short. There's definitely a concern that that emboldens Donald Trump to do more of the same and issue broad-based pardons unilaterally without them going through the system that is supposed to ensure the pardons are righteous.
What about the clemency issued to the 37 federal death row inmates?
That's firing up talk radio this week. I mean, you all see that. You all hear that. Up and down the dial, that's become a cable news and a talk radio wedge issue for the holiday week. I think what Trump's arguing is that this sends a message that is antithetical to law and order by showing any leniency for the worst of the worst of federal criminal defendants. I think what some maybe more politically neutral critics would say is, why 37 of 40, not all 40? If you're making a value judgment, how do you cut off certain people and include others? That's a problem. But this is a statement about the death penalty that I think President Biden would like the world to hear, that the U.S. Is less tolerant of the death penalty. The value of that message, I leave in the eye of the beholder, but it's a message he's very clearly trying to send.
Yeah, I do imagine that granting clemency to the Boston Marathon bomber would not have gone over well with anybody, probably, yeah. Scott McFarland, CBS News, thank you for checking in with us the day after Christmas. Enjoy your socks and whatever's left of the eggnog.
Same to you guys. Thank you so much.
Scott McFarland, congressional correspondent for CBS News. He is fantastic. Love having him on the show. I've got Nate Gatter with me, Chris Ranji. And yes, by the way, in talking about those 37 commuting, these sentences that were commuted, the 37 people, the three who were not were Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, the Boston Marathon bomber, Dylan Roof, who did the shooting in the black church in South Carolina, and then Robert Bowers, who was the Tree of Life synagogue shooter. So those are the three people that he did not offer those to. Everybody else, though, he did. Nate Gatter, Chris Ranji, leave us a voice message or a text. You can leave us a text, 314-436-7900. Voice messages on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Nate Gatter is in for Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji today. Hey, I cannot wait, Nathan. Oh, you're not Nathan. You're just Nate. I cannot wait until Oasis gets back on tour, which is going to happen next year. You know about the international tour, don't you?
I do now.
You're just... What?
I had heard they were back together. I didn't know there was a specific tour announced, which I guess those two things went hand in hand, right? They probably just announced the tour as they were announcing they were getting back together.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's why they're getting back together for
right.
the tour.
Right. You don't get back together not to make money.
They are set to make a ton of money. If the two of them, the Gallagher brothers, that's Liam and Noel, if they can find a way to stay in each other's good graces enough to complete the tour. They stand to make quite a bit of money. Well, Liam Gallagher, I don't know if you saw this or not, but he posted on Twitter a Christmas Day celebration with about 20 or so family members, it looks like. Who's missing? Noel Gallagher. So they didn't even, it looks like, unless they did it secretly and we don't know, it looks like Noel and Liam Gallagher did not celebrate Christmas together. There's also been reporting that that each person's management teams have been trying to keep them separated up until the beginning of the tour so that they don't tank the tour.
I was going to say, it begs the question, if they're not even celebrating Christmas together, what are the odds that this tour never even starts?
Man, I don't know. They're coming to Soldier Field. I believe that's the closest location. I'm going to try to get in. I didn't get in through the lottery. There was a lottery system, but I know people. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see if I can. I've got to see that show. I have to.
Big name
guy. But it better happen first.
Chris Ranji has connections. Ranj, did you see reports, really rumors, based on the origin. We have to say rumors, not reports, but rumors today that St. Louis City's new 2025 home kit, that is home jersey, will feature diagonal stripes on the jersey. Going to be a big change that is true.
I love diagonal stripes.
Well, that's good for you. If anybody else loves diagonal stripes, then you should get in line for your jersey.
Are diagonal stripes a big deal?
I think in general for people who are maybe new soccer fans because they're supporting St. Louis City and don't necessarily follow European soccer or professional soccer at large, the relatively significant changes that can happen in an MLS team's jersey over a two-year span, or really every year because they'll change the home and then the road and then the home, might be a little surprising that the city's not going to just wear basically the city red jersey that we have gotten used to for the first two seasons, that's not going to be the look in perpetuity. That might surprise people. Okay. So in that sense, it's a big change. If the Cardinals suddenly showed up with diagonal stripes, that would be surprising.
They've been around 125. How many years? It's been a long time. Been a long time, man. That would be different. I think when you're in year three, you can do whatever you want with the uniforms.
And then they'll do it again.
I'm sorry, kits.
In year five and year seven and year nine.
The City SC schedule for 2025 is out, by the way, and we're going to get into that a little bit later. Nate Gatter, the host of the Soccer Report here on KMOX with Gen C. So he knows a thing or two about City SC, so we will do that later in the show. Bernie Miklas joins us at the bottom of next hour. It is Nate and Chris Ranji on KMOX.